Cat, 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 cat. Is that what you're here for, huh? Can't get rid of that habit. Well, I do the same thing. We're always talking. We're always gabbing. Well, we have only 1 hour, so we're trying to benefit that 1 hour. And then after the hour, you can gab as long as you want. Beautiful to gab. I love that. Me and him, we sat in the apartment all night long, gabbing, you know. And that's why I'm tired now from gabbing all night. Okay, well, first thing I want to ask you, how did you enjoy this program this morning? All right. Great. I think Eliyahu is better speaker than me because he can speak English better than me. And, me and my broken English. he speaks from the heart too, because we've been working as a team. As I mentioned before, we are the bird with two wings. He's one wing and I'm the other. And one wing never flies.
So. It takes two wings.
So we are flying in this world, you know, to do some kind of work and to get in touch with people, because it's very important, you know. Eliyahu brings so many visitors to my house. Actually, all the groups come to visit Eliyahu. He brings him and he goes, Chef Bukhari takes him. And he goes, I got me. No, I'm just kidding. But it's really, we're working as a good team together. People want to come and do meditation, so we do meditation. People, they like to come and listen to Sufi work and spirituality, so we'll give them talk. People just like to come and have a cup of tea and get, talking, you know. We also do that, you know. Many people come to the house and they just want a cup of tea with a sheikh and just talk normal things and get friendly, get to know each other. And it's not always you have to be formed as you have to come to my house only if you want to do spirituality talk or if you want to do meditation. Other than that, you're not welcome, you know. That's not the way it is, you know. It's a friendly place. People can come and just have a tea and sit. And I have a beautiful museum. I didn't mention that earlier because we were limited to time, but now I think we can talk about that a little bit. I have a museum at the house. I think the room is almost a little bit bigger than this room, but contain everything belong to the family for the last 400 years. So
amazing room. It's like you're walking up the Via della Rosa. It's a small green door, okay? And then you walk up the steps. There's a little mosque to your right, you know, off of the Via della Rosa. You walk up the steps and you get to a courtyard, and then you have to go around the corner, past the courtyard, and then you have to ring a buzzer, and then you get into another courtyard, and then you have to go through another door and down another set of stairs, and then through one part of the house, and then to another courtyard, then to another room.
There are two restrooms in between.
So then from his front door to his living room, it's quite a maze. So just that in and of itself, walking that from the front door to his living room is an experience. It's like walking to another portalway, to another dimension. It feels like to me. When I get to his living room, we sit there, it's such a, there's pictures of his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather. They were all Sufi sheikhs, and all living in Jerusalem. And we sit down, and we usually sit in a circle, and then there's this little person who comes peeking her head behind the door. And then she'll, like, you know, hesitate and run back and forth. And it turns out it's the sheikh's 3-year-old daughter, Danya. Can you tell us a little bit about Danya?
Well, I'm speechless. No. Danya, she was I have 5 kids, 25 years old, all the way down to 15. And Maharashi said, ah, enough. And on the millennium, my wife, she told me, guess what? And I thought she wanted me to buy her something new for the millennium. She said, I'm pregnant. What?
Your next oldest child is how old?
15. And I said, after 15 years, you come and tell me you're pregnant. What? Are you sure? She said, yeah. I didn't tell you before till I was 100% sure. The millennium, God's gift, you know, what do you want? Right? So we got a little girl and we called her Dania. In the Arabic Quran, the word Dania, it means the something, it's close, near, appealing. Has 3 meanings behind it. So I thought that name will match her. Even she was just very little one. She came in surgery weighing only 1 kilo and 200 grams. And we carried her like this. That's our new babies, you know. Very, very little one, you know. But thank God she grew up to be a very strong little girl, and now she's 3, going on 4. And she is the Sufi girl. My other daughters, they never come when I have a guest in the house talking about Sufism. But this one, she comes down, and as he said, she peek, and then she enter, and she sit down. And last time Eliyahu was there, what she did offer you?
A little piece of her candy.
So she shared. And sharing, it means she's willing to give. You know, share things with others. And that's the sign I know that this little daughter will become a Sufi sheikh, sheikha. It's a good feeling. Now I have one son. I have also a son. He's 18 years old. Well, a little bit over 18. And I've been teaching him, as my father did to me, since I was a little kid, the role of Sufi and the role of Sheikh. Because one day I'm gonna pass out, and somebody has to take my place. And so I have to get him ready for that position. And now he's doing his work on his own for youth interfaith religion dialogue. He gathered Christian and Muslims and Jew in regular meetings and explained to them what and why we have to talk to each other, why we have to know each other, why we have to sit together and build that trust. You can't love somebody from distance. You can't walk on the street and see people, oh, I love this guy and I love this one and I love this one. But when you get to know a person, like when I first met Eliyahu, I can't say I just loved him, but after knowing him, know what's inside of his heart, I start loving this person because he is immaterial, full of love. So I have to love this person because he is so much love inside of him that you can't resist but loving him. And to know the others, then you know what's inside of them. You get to the heart, then you can love these people. And when you love, as he said, his mother is a Jew and his father is a Christian. But what united them? What united them?
Love.
Yeah. You know, they didn't say, oh, you're a Jewish, I'm a Christian, we can't get married, you know. This is against my religion, this is against your religion. They love each other, they married each other. You know, how many foreigners comes to here and they marry in Scotland? They marry, they say, oh, you're Scottish and you're a foreigner, I'm not going to marry you. Different religion, different language, different culture, you know. They have feeling for love, they marry, they have kids. The whole world. All the obstacles fall down when there's love. Religious, culture, colors, languages, places, you know, it would go all down if there's love. So that's why I say with love, we can establish peace. Because when you love a person, no way you're going to hate him. No way you're going to harm him. No way you're going to do something bad. And I think Eliyahu shared the same idea about that. Love is what he's doing, bringing all the youth, all the people who come and trying to find the divine for peace and understanding and way to reach the others. And if it wasn't for Eliyahu, probably I won't be active as much as I'm now, because I couldn't fly with one wing, you know. I will keep surfing around myself. So with the other wing, that's we can doing many conference abroad, not only in Israel. We do many in Jerusalem, in Israel. We done number in Nazareth, in Netanya, and also in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Neve Shalom.
Neve Shalom.
There's talk about Neve Shalom, because I think the Neve Shalom is a very good example.
Yeah.
Okay. You know more about Neve Shalom, so.
Well, I'll share with you what we did at Neve Shalom, but maybe I could tell a little bit about the history.
Okay.
In the Middle East of the cooperation and put it in context. So.
Okay.
If you remember earlier today, I shared about the sheikhs and the imams and the rabbis were all one-upping each other. Well, my grandfather, right, and his grandfather was one of those grandfathers. His grandfather knew the Talmud. Well, in the Middle East, there, you know, the work that we're doing today is really not just out of thin air, but it's picking up with a centuries-long tradition of understanding and cooperation between the from a spiritual angle, from living together. You ask any of the old people, Jewish or Muslim, Israeli or Palestinian, the ones who lived before 1948 in the 30s, they all have stories of how when there was a bar mitzvah, a Jewish bar mitzvah, Muslim and Christian families were there. When there was a Muslim baby born, there were Jewish families there. And in fact, even the mothers used to suckle, the Jewish mothers used to suckle the children with their breasts of the Muslim neighbor, and the Muslim mothers used to suckle the children of the Jewish and Christian neighbor. That's how close and intimate there was.
Yes.
A connection. Now, the path of the mystics has always been a bridge between the different faiths. You have the exoteric, the sort of more rigid form of religion that developed an exclusive worldview, but there are always the mystics on the edge of each group that were building bridges of understanding. How many of you have heard of the 12th century Jewish scholar Rambam, Maimonides? So those of you who don't know, Maimonides was the greatest scholar in Jewish history, like after the time of, you know, the prophets and Moses and stuff. They were in the rabbinic tradition. Maimonides was a physician to the Sultan of Cairo, and he was in Spain before that. Well, how many of you know the fact that the son of Maimonides, his name is, it was called Avraham ben Maimon. Abraham, the son of Maimonides, Avraham ben Maimon, was a Jewish Sufi. The son of the Rambam, Avraham ben Maimonides, studied with the Sufis of Cairo. He was trying to bring about the Jewish renewal movement of his day, because he saw that prayer and synagogue life had gotten very rigid and very narrow. And he looked to the Sufis as having preserved the prophetic way of worship, that the original way of the prophets, that the Jewish people had lost touch with when we went into exile after the destruction of the Second Temple. So here were Orthodox rabbis, the head of the Jewish community in Cairo, studying with the Sufis. Not only the son of Maimonides, but his grandson, Avraham ben Ovadia Maimonides, wrote a book called Treaties of the Pool. And if any of you want to get that book, Treaties of the Pool, by Professor Paul Fenton. Professor Paul Fenton is a scholar of Jewish Sufi texts that have been recently uncovered from the Cairo Geniza documents. And he translated a lot of these texts, and they're written Judeo-Arabic. Arabic language with Hebrew letters. Judeo-Arabic, from the Middle Ages. Mm. So 7 generations, descendants of Maimonides, were Jewish Sufis. And they used to go into what is called halwa, pit bodedut, solitary meditation. Because there is a Sufi tradition of going into a place of seclusion to meditate. They used to also do fasting practices. The Sheikh always, when he's in Jerusalem, he does a practice of fasting on Mondays and Thursdays. That's also a Jewish Kabbalistic tradition.
All year round.
Yeah. That's also a Kabbalistic tradition of the Jewish mystics to fast on Monday and Thursday. And so we know that for 7 generations, there was this Jewish Sufi movement in Cairo. But not only there, Damascus, Morocco, Spain, Yemen, they were the mystics of the two traditions coming together. Have you any of you heard of the city of the Kabbalists called Sfat or Safed or Safed in the Galilee? Sfat or Safed is one of the 4 holy cities in the Holy Land, according to the Jewish tradition. Jerusalem is the element of fire. Hebron or Al-Halil in Arabic is the element of earth. Tiberias, the holy city, element of water. And Sfat or Safed, element of air. The same time as the major Kabbalists, the Arizal, meaning Isaac Luria, and Chaim Vital, his student, the major Kabbalists of the 13th, 14th, 15th centuries, the time that Kabbalah was flourishing there, it was also a major Sufi center. And Professor Fenton, this Jewish scholar of Sufism, who spends half the year in Jerusalem, he was walking through the hills of Har Kanaan, Mount Kanaan, opposite Sfat, and he fell into a cave. And in the cave, he shone a light on the wall, and it turned out that it was a Sufi meditation chamber called the Halwa of the Rafai Sufis. And they found inscriptions on the wall that showed that it was in use at the same time as Kabbalah was flourishing in Sfat. So this isn't just some, we're coming here to preach about what we're doing now, but we're very much connecting to a long tradition of cooperation. So all of the centers of Kabbalah were centers of Sufism and Christian mysticism, because the Desert Fathers were there. So I see like a tradition from the Essenes to the Jewish mystics to the Kabbalists to the Sufis. They're all keeping the same mystic fire alive in connection. Not only in the Middle East, but even in Eastern Europe, the Hasidic tradition, we know that there was interaction with the Sufis.
Well, the Hasidic is from Sufi.
Hasid means Sufi. Yeah, Hasid. In fact, the movement in Cairo were called the Hasidim. The Jewish, they were called the Hasidim. Yeah. But I'm saying that even in Eastern Europe, if any of you have heard of Chabad Hasidism, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, who founded one of the major branches of Hasidut, of Hasidism, the main movement of Jewish mysticism that grew out from the Baal Shem Tov, master of the name in Eastern Europe, The founder of Chabad Hasidism was jailed with a man named Shamil, S-H-A-M-I-L. Shamil was from Chechnya. So the Tsar jailed the founder of this big Hasidic movement, Shneur Zalman, together with Shamil from Chechnya. And Shamil was one of the founders of the Chechnya National Liberation Movement. And also, it turns out, a Sufi. And a Naqshbandi Sufi. This is his order, Naqshbandi Sufi. And when the Tsar took Shamil to be executed, Shamil taught this Hasidic master, this Hasidic Rebbe, a nigun, a melody. And till this day, all of the Chabad Hasidim sing a nigun, a melody, called the Shamil Nigun. That is actually come from a Muslim Sufi Islamic tradition, now part of Eastern European Hasidic lore. How many of you know that history? Rabbi Nachman, the Rabbi Nancy who spoke this morning, also read writings from Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman lived in the Ukraine, and he's buried in Uman. But he made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land through Akko. Before he died, he made a pilgrimage. And in his writings, it says that he met a young Muslim, ecstatic lover of God. If that's not a description of a Sufi, I don't know what is. But that he met him, and that the two of them had a mystic encounter that changed his outlook before he went back to Eastern Europe. So we know that there's interaction. Shabbatai Tzvi, sometimes called the False Messiah, he was in 1666, claimed to be a Messiah. Eventually he converted to Islam. You know, it was a whole complicated history. But after he converted to Islam, you know, most of the Jewish world followed Shabbatai Tzvi. And most of the yeshivas in the traditional Jewish world today suppress all knowledge of Shabbatai Tzvi. What was he writing about? What was he talking about? Well, Shabbatai Tzvi, the great Kabbalist and mystic, who is always called the False Messiah, was writing prayers for unity of the three traditions. He also was liberating the tradition, including calling women to read the Torah in the synagogues, making sure that there was equality of gender in the places of prayer, and that he also had many followers who were Christian and mystics and the Sufis. And he was in deep study and prayer with the Bektashi Sufis in Turkey.
Okay.
So we see over and over again this history of connection on the mystical level. I want to say in the modern day, I just have to add this in, because people were asking, are there women involved in peace work? And the answer is absolutely yes.
Yes.
Though the Sheikh and I like to say we're in touch with our feminine side, and therefore in balance, but our closest friend, one of my closest friends is Ibtisam. You met Ibtisam, right, in Tamara, right? She's a religious Muslim woman working for peace. There's a women's interfaith encounter of Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and Druze women. Because oftentimes in the larger public meetings, the male voice can be dominant. So they've created a safe space for women of all faiths to work together for peace. There's a coalition, Women for a Just Peace. There, if you look on the internet,
Women in Black,
there's a lot of organizations. So
yes.
Just because we're two men here doesn't mean we want to not include and remind you that there are those groups
there's
working.
Female strength behind us.
Yeah. And in us, right, in us. Right, and so a lot of our, and every interfaith prayer gathering that I organize, like at Tantur, there was some Buddhist monks from Japan at the time of the Israeli army siege of the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem. They wanted to do a prayer for peace right outside the church, and I said, well, it's highly unlikely that Israeli general public will feel uncomfortable to go into the heart of Bethlehem. But we found this place called Tantur. Tantur is right on the border of Jerusalem and Bethlehem. It's owned by the Vatican, so it's neutral territory, at least from... Right. So Palestinians can come from one side and Israelis on the other side. So we organized a prayer gathering on the roof overlooking Bethlehem with Buddhists and Hindus, Sikhs, every religion, and... Ibtisam, religious Muslim woman, spoke. Devorah Brous. Emuna Witt, she's a student of Shlomo Carlbach. She has 14 children, and she's a powerful peacemaker in her own right. And she always
said... She got 14 little ones behind her.
And unfortunately, some of her children have gotten more pulled in by the more radical, like, Kahanist ideology. And she's always the first one to defend the peace work that Eliyahu is doing.
Yeah.
And she said, they always say, Eliyahu shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. He shouldn't be bringing Palestinians from Nablus into our synagogue on Friday, like I did. I brought some Palestinians from the Dialogue Project in Nablus into the heart of a religious Orthodox synagogue in Jerusalem with settlers and Hasidim dancing, and I brought the Palestinians right into the circle. And you can imagine that. And all the kids said, you know, one of the kids who knew me, he says, but his friends are the Hamas. They'll find out where a mosque is, our synagogue is, and they'll send someone after us. And Emuna Witt said, what he's doing is very much in the spirit of Shlomo Carlbach, their teacher. He would have done the same thing. And they started to, but Mom, it's not right. And she says, Emuna said to them, I don't care what you say, I gave birth to every one of you. Therefore, I'm right. I know. Yeah. What can you say to that? You know. And so she's my biggest offender. And so we also have the mystics, the women mystics of the different traditions coming together. There are also hidden sheikhas, not just Sufi sheikhs, but sheikhs and women who are teaching on the level of a rabbi, and they're not called rabbi, and they're also working together. I thought in the time...
Chagit
Ra'anan, yes, we also met Chagit. She was in Tamer with us. And I want to add also, it's not to say that when we talk about love and unity, that we're ignoring the issues of justice, issues of equality, the horrible wall that's going up, all of these different difficult political issues that... But what we're saying is that that is one part of the coin, but there has to be an opening of hearts to help rebuild trust, to reduce the fear. The wall is a manifestation of fear. I ask why a lot of my friends, why do you support the wall? I think it's the most horrible thing to come along in many years, and it's just we're afraid. We're afraid. And the illusion is that the wall will you know, make life safer. It's not, but it's just all psychological. The illness is here. It's the physical wall is the wall of the mind. And so this is the work that we're doing, is to reduce the hatred and the fear that separates us. We want to do now a prayer with some zikr in both Hebrew and Arabic. And so we want everyone to stand up, to push the chairs aside, and we're going to form one circle.